Hey folks, you guys know I'm always diving into the dark corners of history, unearthing the stories that are sure to chill. Mastering the art of storytelling and research isn't just a passion, it's a craft. That's why I turn to Masterclass. Whether I'm analyzing historical documents or piecing together ghostly tales, Masterclass has been an invaluable resource in honing my skills. Masterclass lets you learn from over 200 of the world's best minds right at your fingertips. And the best part is it's all available for just $10 a month with an annual membership. I've been particularly captivated by the class on investigative journalism taught by Pulitzer Prize winner Bob Woodward. His insights into uncovering the truth may have transformed the way I approach each episode here. What's incredible is that 88% of members feel that Masterclass has made a positive impact on their lives. And trust me, I'm one of them. The depth of knowledge and practical tips I've gained have boosted my confidence and enriched the content that I bring to you every week. As a listener of Haunted American History, you get an exclusive 15% off an annual membership. Just visit masterclass.com/haunted. That's masterclass.com/haunted to save 15% on limitless learning. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So what are you going to lose? Don't wait. Join me and start transforming your passions into expertise by visiting masterclass.com/haunted. I'll see you there.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Every now and then on this show, I talk about Florida. I've made it abundantly clear that my wife and I are constant visitors to Disney World, more so than I really care to admit. We're not Disney adults, I promise. We just really like theme parks, and they do it really well. We spend just as much time in Universal and Busch Gardens. Maybe. It's just that Disney has the best dog-friendly hotels, and we like to travel with the little guy. Anyway, I've mentioned that Key West is probably my most favorite place on the planet. And it was what was most responsible for my love of all things paranormal. But I've covered Key West. Let's see what other haunts the Sunshine State has to offer. Do you believe in ghosts? Join me on a journey through America's dark and haunted past as we explore the ghost stories and folklore that have been passed down for generations. What scares you? Let's find out. I'm Christopher Feinstein, and this is Haunted American History. The St. Augustine Lighthouse is a historic landmark located in St. Augustine, Florida. Built in 1874, the lighthouse served as a beacon for sailors navigating the treacherous waters of the Atlantic Ocean. Today, it's a popular tourist attraction that draws visitors from around the world. However, many believe that the lighthouse is haunted by the ghosts of two young girls who died on the property in the late 19th century. The lighthouse was constructed in the mid-19th century to replace an earlier lighthouse that had fallen into disrepair. The new lighthouse was designed by Paul J. Pelz, a prominent architect who also designed the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. The tower stands 165 feet tall and is made of brick and iron. It was equipped with a First Order Fresnel lens, which was considered state-of-the-art technology at the time. For many years, the lighthouse was operated by a series of keepers and their families. They lived in the house adjacent to the tower and were responsible for maintaining the lighthouse and burning the light. The job was difficult and often dangerous, as the tower was on a rocky shoreline prone to storms and high winds. According to legend, the St. Augustine Lighthouse is haunted by the ghost of two young girls who drowned in the water near the lighthouse in 1873. Legend has it that the two girls, Eliza and Mary Pitty, were playing on the property when they fell into the water and drowned. Some versions of the story suggest that they were playing a game of tag and ran out onto the pier, while others claim that they were playing with a ball and it rolled into the water. Despite their father's efforts to save them, the girls were swept out to sea and their bodies were sadly never recovered. Since that tragic day, many reports have been of ghostly activity at the St. Augustine Lighthouse. Visitors and employees alike have reported seeing the ghostly apparition of a young girl wearing a blue dress on the stairs of the lighthouse. Others have heard the sound of laughter and playful voices, even when no one else is around. There have also been reports of objects moving on their own, and cold spots that seem to come and go for no apparent reason. In addition to the sightings and sounds, there have been several instances where ghost hunters have captured photographic evidence of paranormal activity at the St. Augustine Lighthouse. One of the most famous photographs was taken by a ghost hunting team in 2006, which appears to show the ghostly figure of a girl standing at the top of the lighthouse. While many skeptics argue that the photo is simply a trick of the light, others believe it's concrete evidence of the haunting. Despite the reports of ghostly activity, many people still visit the St. Augustine Lighthouse every year without experiencing anything out of the ordinary. Some speculate that the ghostly activity is more likely to occur at night or during times of high emotional energy, such as when the anniversary of the girl's death approaches. Others believe that the girls are content to remain in the area, watching over the lighthouse and its visitors. Regardless of what you believe, the haunting of the St. Augustine Lighthouse is a fascinating aspect of the lighthouse's history and a reminder that tragedies can occur, even in the most idyllic of settings. The lighthouse is an iconic symbol of the Florida coast, and its history and architecture are fascinating in their own right. But the ghostly legend that surrounds the lighthouse adds an extra layer of mystery and intrigue. Whether or not you believe in ghosts, there's no denying that the story of the two young girls who died on the property is tragic. If you ever have the chance to visit the lighthouse in St. Augustine, keep your eyes and ears open. You never know what you might see or hear. Lighthouse. There is a small island in the Mediterranean Sea that does not appear on any map. It cannot be seen from any other island, nor can any other land be seen from it. On this island is a lighthouse, rotting from age and seawater, which is never lit. There is nothing inside of it, save for a spiraling staircase that leads to the top and an ancient dusty bookcase. The case is filled with unmarked books, bound in ancient leather, save for a single space. If you remove a book from the shelf, it will fling itself open into your hands, and the words inscribed in it shall start screaming into the air. You must wrestle the book closed and shove it back on the shelf, or the immortal evil contained within its pages shall break free, and you will be forced to take its place, with pages, ink, and binding crafted from your own flesh and blood. However, if you bring the correct book to the island and place it in the empty space, the lighthouse will light. As long as it is lit, the world shall enjoy an unending paradise. For the evil in this world will be contained in the lighthouse, and while it is lit, nothing can go in or out. The only problem is that you will be trapped for eternity in there, with all the evil ever known or conceived by man or God. The only way to escape is to douse the light. Hey folks, you guys know I'm always diving into the dark corners of history, unearthing the stories that are sure to chill. Mastering the art of storytelling and research isn't just a passion, it's a craft. That's why I turn to Masterclass. Whether I'm analyzing historical documents or piecing together ghostly tales, Masterclass has been an invaluable resource in honing my skills. Masterclass lets you learn from over 200 of the world's best minds right at your fingertips. And the best part is it's all available for just $10 a month with an annual membership. I've been particularly captivated by the class on investigative journalism taught by Pulitzer Prize winner Bob Woodward. His insights into uncovering the truth may have transformed the way I approach each episode here. What's incredible is that 88% of members feel that Masterclass has made a positive impact on their lives. And trust me, I'm one of them. The depth of knowledge and practical tips I've gained have boosted my confidence and enriched the content that I bring to you every week. As a listener of Haunted American History, you get an exclusive 15% off an annual membership. Just visit masterclass.com/haunted. That's masterclass.com/haunted to save 15% on limitless learning. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so what are you going to lose? Don't wait. Join me and start transforming your passions into expertise by visiting masterclass.com/haunted. I'll see you there. Florida is regarded by many as a tropical paradise, a beautiful shimmering oasis with palm trees, springs, and pristine beaches. I mean, I personally always feel better when I'm surrounded by palm trees. A stark difference from the pine trees that I'm normally surrounded by. Goddamn pine barrens. But sometimes, the Sunshine State's summertime temperatures and humidity might make it feel like hell. The state is steeped in centuries of history, with a handful of destinations that derive their name from Hell's Pal, the Devil. The term Devil's Chair is part of American folklore. Less diabolic terms such as Haunted Chair are sometimes used interchangeably. Back in the Victorian era, cemeteries were designed to look like parks, with visitors coming to picnic and take in the atmosphere. Such spaces often contained functional ornamentation like benches and chairs, dubbed mourning chairs. And now present-day cemeteries provide similar seating for visitors. It is likely that many carved chairs were not meant for everyday use, but rather to stand as monuments. As this purpose faded out of fashion, superstition stories built up around these chairs. People would dare each other to visit the chair at a particular moment, like midnight or Halloween. Legend held that either punishment or reward could be meted out depending on the nerve of the person who sat in it. And thus, we come across the Devil's Chair, a forgotten stone bench or chair whose legend has taken off through time and tradition. A Devil's Chair is more synonymous with Casadega than anywhere else. Just 35 miles north of Orlando lies the small town of Casadega. In 1991, Casadega was added to the National Register of Historic Places because of its mostly unchanged architecture since it was first settled in the 1800s. In 1894, George P. Colby, a trance medium based in New York, founded the unincorporated area of Volsea County, known as Casadega. Located near Daytona Beach, this quaint village features a hotel, post office, 4 New Age stores, and around 50 homes. The town's slogan perfectly captures its enigmatic vibe, where Mayberry meets the Twilight Zone. Its sense of calm is quickly replaced by an uneasy feeling upon entering the area. Most locals specialize in communication with spirits or fortune-telling. They charge up to $50 an hour for private readings from their dwellings. With a population of only 3,000, this area is renowned for its abundance of psychic mediums and haunted houses. It is quite a contrast to the conservative Bible traditions of Florida. Casadega Spiritual Camp was founded in 1895. George Colby cemented its place as the hub of spiritualism and psychic mediumship. It has even been referred to as the psychic center of the world. Moreover, Casadega Cemetery is home to the iconic Devil's Chair, which, if sat upon, is said to summon Satan himself. That was a lot of S words. But why Casadega? What makes this place so special that seemingly all the people who live in this small Floridian town all share the same connection to the paranormal? Well, it's believed to be due to the vortex that it's situated upon, a naturally occurring concentrated point of psychic energy. It is well known that other vortexes exist in the world, such as those at Stonehenge and Giza. Within this powerful vortex lies the cemetery filled with gravestones dating back to the 1800s. Although much damage was done by vandals who moved and tipped over headstones, many of those buried here were once residents of Lake Helen and Casadega itself, including George P. Colby. And located right in the center of this vortex is the infamous red brick bench, the Devil's Chair. People say that it's simply a grave marker, a simple stone chair that is said to have been used by a family who owned the land before it was turned into a cemetery. Legend has it that the family patriarch, a wealthy man who was rumored to have made a deal with the devil, used the chair to commune with Satan. When he died, his family buried him in the cemetery and placed the chair on top of his grave as a symbol of his pact with the devil. Many people claim the devil himself speaks to you when you sit on the chair, and some report hearing voices in their head when seated. Others claim that the devil appears to you in person sitting in the chair. There is a legend about the devil's chair. If you leave a can of unopened beer on the bench, you will find it empty but still unopened the next day. That's weird. According to other versions of the story, the can is either completely gone or found open in the morning. I wonder who did that. On All Hallows Eve, it is said that a young man was there to take a seat at the devil's chair as midnight struck. Ooh, he went for the double whammy. His friends watched as he navigated between the headstones and ventured into the darkness. They never saw him again. Some believe his fate was determined by Satan himself, who dragged him away kicking and screaming. Others think he was swallowed up by the vortex, a victim of the dark energy that seems to radiate from this place. Whatever truly happened still remains a mystery, but one thing is certain. It must have been terrifying. Over the years, people have reported strange occurrences when they sit on the devil's chair. Some have claimed to feel a sudden drop in temperature, while others have reported feeling a sensation of being pushed out of the chair. And some have even claimed to see the devil himself appear right before them. From the pages of the Gainesville Sun, November 14th, 1982. Albert Bowes is a man possessed of uncanny, otherworldly talents. He is a practical, professional psychic who sees things other people don't. Without ever having met you, his reading can include information about you with an unusual degree of accuracy and insight. Past and future circumstances in your life and the lives of others you know or have yet to meet. He can also very specifically tell you your health or lack of it. From a photograph, he tells of the health of the one pictured. He can help find lost people or property. He has provided information to law enforcement officials, which has led to the evidence sufficient enough to make arrests. Bowes, 32, has been aware of his psychic ability since he was 7. Following a 4-year apprenticeship at Casadega, Florida, he became a certified psychic in 1973. By 1979, with the publication of the book Visions of Time by archaeologist and University of Central Florida instructor David E. Jones, his acceptance by the public had increased dramatically. Subtitled Experiments in Psychic Archaeology, Jones's book documents the experiments conducted by the author and others, including Florida State Museum staff. Bowles is the principal one of 4 psychics used in the experiments. Despite double blinds, tightly taped boxes containing artifacts, and being taken to sites previously unknown to him, Bowes was able to tell the experts in great detail the content of the boxes, about the people who made them, and about who had lived at the sites hundreds and even thousands of years ago, such as the Timucan Indians and the Mayans of Mexico. With an 80% success rate confirmed by Jones and his associates, Bowes, despite not being trained or educated in archaeology, has proved the validity and usefulness of combining psychic knowledge with academic research. Bowes cooperates with medical doctors around the state who are open to psychic medical diagnosis as an aid to healing. The results of these diagnostic readings are confirmed by more orthodox diagnosis techniques, such as X-ray and ultrasound. Such psychic readings are done with only the permission of the patient, Bowes said. More and more physicians are willing to consider the use of psychic diagnosis with their patients, Bowes said. They still have to be careful about using this technique, though. The majority of doctors seem not yet ready to investigate the use of psychics to aid them and their patients. So the doctors who are willing have to be careful and not to attract controversy or professional criticism, commented Bowes, who understands the doctor's position. I think the time will come, however, when psychic knowledge will be accepted as simply another helpful tool for the doctor and patient. In addition to his regular schedule of $35 readings in his Casadega home, Bowes currently conducts a psychic development class in Gainesville and Melbourne. His services have become so popular that an appointment must be made to receive his readings. The weekly Gainesville class is held to a capacity of 10 to 12 people. The fee is $10 a session, and the group meets in the homes of its members. Those in the present class include teachers, nurses, a musician, a professional photographer, college staff members, and office workers. Some of the subjects discussed are psychic influences on health, interpersonal relationships, healing, telepathy, clairvoyance, and coping with death. Techniques of meditation and mental imagery to help achieve a psychic state are practiced. In varying degrees, all of those in the class say they are experiencing the ability to produce desired psychic results. Often the results are from reading a concern of someone in the class. Sometimes advice is also given as to what to do about the concern. Just being with other people who believe we have this ability and can develop it makes us all get better at it, said one enthusiastic woman in the class. The energetic Bose said he believes we all have this ability to one degree or another. But like any talent or skill, it must be recognized and cultivated through some rather hard work. It takes discipline and regular practice. Also, a great importance is belief. You must get rid of doubt and be ready to accept the fact that you can develop and use your psychic ability for practical purposes. And there will be times that you will become frustrated. But if you want to succeed in being able to use your psychic gift, you must keep practicing. Even with my experience, and with the degree of psychic ability I was evidently born with, I'm still not on target all the time, Bose said. Not to mince words, Bose said he gets impatient with some of the psychics who require a certain setting in which to be effective. There's no magic to all of this. No mumbo jumbo or spirits floating around. That's okay, I guess, if you need it. I've simply learned to tune into my psychic energy or intuition and am able to tell people what I perceive about them. Where does this energy come from? God, Bose says. God, or whatever you perceive God to be. For those into Star Wars, it's the Force, he said with a grin. Some people fear me, he said. Fear the psychic. To me, fear is ignorance. Some people get mad or upset with me in a reading because I tell them what they don't like or what they don't want to face in their lives or within themselves. Nothing I tell a person in a reading comes from me. It comes from them. In trying to explain how he is only an instrument, a conduit, Bose says, I'm like a radio. I can give you the weather report, but I don't make the weather. But while Casadegans welcome visitors during the day so they can pay the bills, they fear the troublemakers who inevitably show up at night. After that article, Bose was interviewed a number of years later by a member of Vice. And he told them that after the town gained popularity with teenagers as a late-night Halloween activity, some kids showed up and started ringing a large bell outside the spiritualist church. When a resident confronted them, he was beat up pretty badly. Although Bose wishes it weren't the case, the incident caused a panic among the people who run this town. It intimidated a lot of small-minded people here, he said. And the camp association isn't as Mayberry as you'd think. Shortly after that incident, the locals put up signs saying that visitors will be prosecuted after dusk. A huge metal fence was erected along the perimeter of the Casadega Lake Helen Cemetery. But some people thrive on fear. They seek that sudden rush of adrenaline and find the icy grip of terror amusing and strangely life-affirming. To this day, the cemetery attracts many nearby ghost hunters and rebellious teenagers looking for a thrill, many of whom vandalize the cemetery and graves, especially on Halloween. The cemetery has a nighttime security guard posted on Halloween to keep intruders away. Some of the mediums and psychics from Casadega are known to block the road to the cemetery on Halloween as they attempt to contact the dead. Despite the legend, many skeptics argue that the stories surrounding the Devil's Chair are simply a product of overactive imaginations. Some have suggested that the strange occurrences reported by those who sit in the chair can be attributed to natural phenomena, such as wind or temperature fluctuations. Regardless of what you believe, the Devil's Chair and the town surrounding it are a fascinating aspect of the spiritualist community in Casadega. Whether it is a cursed grave marker or simply an urban legend, it serves as a reminder of the enduring power of myth and legend in our culture. Hey folks, cutting in over here just to do my normal round of thank yous to everybody. I've been getting so many comments on my socials lately, my Facebook page and Instagram. I'm trying to get more active on Instagram, but I'm terrible at social media. I've been getting so many kind emails lately, and I'm trying to get back to every single one of you, so if I haven't answered you back yet, I'm working on it. I will personally be reaching out to every single person who communicates with me. Just Got a lot of projects here that I'm working on. A couple things that I can't announce yet. A couple of things coming in the future. A couple of things that I'm working on that I'm really excited about. Hopefully I'll have more information on those things to share. The Lighthouse, the St. Augustine Lighthouse that we just spoke about. Right after that came a little kind of story, which I'm trying to get back into. I know there's a sect of you out there that, you know, loves the folklore aspect. There's another sect who wants the original stories. So I'm trying right now, you know, Thursdays are going to be where my original stories are going. You know, my mixed folklore original stories. Right now, Seclusion's running, and I am beyond thrilled with the way that's going. But I think now during the folklore aspect of the show, if I find a short little original that either comes from me or some of my favorite creepypastas, I will put the links to those stories in my show notes and just kind of little micro stories that I'll throw in that are linked to what I'm talking about. So St. Augustine Lighthouse, you got a little story about a lighthouse. Keeps me happy, keeps you happy, keeps everybody happy, keeps the show rolling. So let's do just that. Let's keep the show rolling. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you again. And if you've reached out, if you've sent a review, if you've left a review, if not, please do so. It's the best way to help the show. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I love every one of you. I appreciate every one of you. And let's keep this journey through Florida going. Fourth floor hotel bathroom. It was on the fourth floor of a hotel when everything unraveled. A man walked into the hotel after what seemed like days of traveling on the road. The receptionist looked at the man as if he was sick. To be honest, he did look like he was sick. He asked if he could stay for about 3 nights after explaining the events of what happened. The receptionist at the front desk listened intently to the man's story with awkward delight. When he was finished, he asked the woman for his key and the amount it would cost him to stay there. She said it would cost him a mere $30 to stay the 3 days, and eagerly gave the man the key. She said that there was only one room left in the hotel, and that it was on the fourth floor. Only 3 doors from the stairs to the left, 6 from the right. Before he departed for his room, the lady leaned over the desk and whispered something in his ear. I couldn't make out any words, but after she was done, I heard him. He had a voice that could soothe anyone. He seemed nice, too, kind and polite, thanking the woman twice before he proceeded to his room. Later that night, I heard the most blood-curdling scream come from 2 floors up. It sounded like that same man again. He ran down the stairs yelling for the receptionist, but to no avail. She had retired to sleep as well. And with no one there, I couldn't help but awaken out of bed and follow the man. I watched him run, nearly tumbling over himself, scrambling for the front door like a madman. I followed him outside into the cold and over to where he stood, horrifyingly frightened over the events of what had just happened. I asked him in sort of a frantic tone, "What happened?" And he explained everything to me. He told me that he went to go to the bathroom, and a misty image of a creature from a nightmare came inching towards him from the mirror. He quickly dismissed it as just my imagination. He told me that it wasn't until tonight that he truly got a good look at it. He told me that it was smiling. Not just smiling, but almost as if the corners of the thing's mouth encircled its entire head and its teeth. How much he detailed the teeth. He described them as having a ghost-like appearance, but they were bloodstained, razor-sharp and pointed. The man told me that the thing's teeth looked like they were almost decayed, and how some of them seemed to puncture through the creature's lips. He then described its eyes. I froze when he told me that the eyes were red and purple in color. They looked like empty voids into the nothing where someone could get trapped. He asked if I had seen this thing. I told him I didn't see the creature in which he mentioned. The man went on to describe its skin. How it was this deep green-gray, barely clinging to the bones. The hair, he said, looked like it was decaying. The scream he told me it let out was eerily maniacal. He described the sound as a scream of a witch and a zombie with a tinge of suicidal rampancy. He told me that it just stood there at his door, glaring at him, then pointed a broken finger at him, a finger whose flesh seemed like it was melted away. He also mentioned that it had a ghostly trail behind it, a black ghostly trail that looked like if it was swaying, like it had a mind of its own. He told me that the trail slowly crawled towards him and the thing was suddenly in his face the moment he blinked his eyes. He asked again how I could not have seen such a nightmare. I again told him that I had not, that no one had ever seen anything like that. After a couple of hours of trying to convince the man that he was just hallucinating, he warily walked with me to his room. The next morning, I went to his room to see if he was all right. The door looked like it was kicked in. Deep scratches lined the frame. I walked in slowly and looked around. The room looked like a tornado ran through it. Torn clothes, broken pictures, and vases littered the room. The floor was ripped up and the mattress was in a heap. Deeper claw marks lined the mattress. There were holes in the wall and some sort of demonic carving. There was a large pool of blood in the middle of the room with a trail leading to the bathroom. I followed it in, and what I saw, I couldn't comprehend. There he was, laying in inhuman ways in the bathroom shower. His arms and legs were seemingly nailed to the wall by bony spikes. His head was in a torn-out part of the wall, a sharp spike shoved right through it. He had no eyes. They'd been ripped from their sockets, as well as the rest of his body parts. His torso was in the tub, bathing in the owner's blood. The smell of it was enough to make me want to gag. What I saw on the mirror still haunts me to this day. It read, "I have claimed another victim in the man's own blood." I never went back to that hotel again, and to this day, I will never enter the fourth floor of any hotel for fear of that creature lurking in the shadows, waiting for me to make the same mistake that that poor man did. And I tell you, whoever you are, never venture past the third floor of any hotel, and especially stay out of the bathroom. This thing could be lurking in the smallest shadow, waiting, watching, hoping for you to let your guard down, and then tearing you apart and hanging you up like ornaments. The Biltmore Hotel in Coral Gables, built in 1925, is described as a luxury golf and spa resort that radiates elegance and old-world charm. The hotel has been a popular destination for high society figures locally and internationally since its foundation. Even the notorious Al Capone was among its guests, along with the Roosevelt family, Vanderbilts, Duke and Duchess of Windsor, Judy Garland, Bing Crosby, and Ginger Rogers. The Biltmore's long-standing goal has been to provide quality service to all its patrons, from the illustrious to the infamous. This grand Mediterranean revivalist structure is a well-constructed multi-floor testament to the design. It stands as the crown jewel in its neighborhood and community. Its ability to blend in with the other residents while offering majestic features made it one of the nation's most prominent hotels. The Biltmore has gone under two extensive renovations at the cost of $50-plus million, with an additional renovation effort by a private organization costing millions after 1992. It now offers much more to its guests and visitors alike. Its facilities are often used for events such as weddings and fashion shows, providing significant usage of the many available spaces. Guests can also take tours, and on Thursday night, ghost stories can be heard from both the public and hotel guests. The patio restaurant is open to everyone who wishes to take in the beauty of this remarkable place while enjoying an exceptional dining experience. Located amongst this beautiful 18-hole golf course, tennis courts, and country club, this impressive red-tiled hotel resembles a European palace, with a Spanish-style red ceramic tile roof and a magnificent archway leading to the hotel's main entrance. The 300-foot copper-clad top of the Biltmore's central 13-story tower impresses from the outside. With 275 rooms, suites, and tower suites, three ballrooms decorated with marble and mosaic designs, 24 conference rooms, and the largest swimming pool in the United States, all of the amenities you would expect from a top-tier resort are just at your fingertips. as well as plenty of ghosts. The unique hotel opened with much pomp and splendor in the winter of 1926. It was a dream project of two remarkable men, John McEntee Bowman and George Merrick. Bowman, a gifted entrepreneur, had extensive experience constructing luxurious hotels for the wealthy elite. He was the mastermind behind the esteemed Biltmore chain. During Prohibition, the 13th floor of the Biltmore Tower was the ideal spot for a speakeasy and gambling den. It was a private, secure space that provided entertainment for hotel guests and wealthy people from Miami, all overseen by a local mobster, Edward Wilson. Joining him were Thomas Fatty Welch and his friend Arthur Clark, two gangsters who had fled New York City to escape the law, whom Wilson turned into partners in this venture with assistance from Arthur. In addition to enjoying a good cigar, Fatty enjoyed the excitement of the lovely ladies. He had some weaknesses that got him into trouble with his partner Edward, who wasn't a forgiving man. It is believed that some members of the Coral Gables law enforcement were bought off, as this was a practice of the mob not only in Florida, but in cities across the United States. In a fit of rage, Edward terminated his partnership with Fatty, believing that Edward's wife was cheating on him with Fatty by shooting the man in the face. Fatty died right in front of the fireplace on the 13th floor speakeasy. It has been suggested that some police department officials were on Wilson's payroll because the police report of this murder disappeared. Wilson also disappeared, resurfacing years later in Cuba. However, it was known that the 13th floor was where this incident occurred. In the wake of Fatty's death, the tower elevators were locked, the speakeasy vanished, and those involved were quickly ushered off campus, out of the police's reach. Officers found only the body of Thomas Fatty Welch. Fatty's friend Arthur was also shot, but he survived. It became difficult for the Biltmore Hotel to survive during World War II in 1941. As a result, it was bought by the federal government and drafted by the armed forces, becoming a military hospital, referred to as the Armed Forces Regional Hospital. It was converted from a luxury resort hotel to a government institution, caring for the wounded. Its marble floors were covered with linoleum, and some windows were covered with cement blocks. Once the war was over, the hospital remained a military hospital, the Hospital of Veterans Affairs, until it was converted into a medical school. The University of Miami's medical school stored corpses of the dead homeless and impoverished on the lower floors, donated to them by the city of Miami and perhaps surrounding areas. In 1973, the Historical Monuments Act allowed Coral Gables to take ownership of this now creepy fixer-upper opportunity in desperate need of significant repairs. The grand building stood vacant and neglected for 10 years by the living. Finally, the city of Coral Gables spent a boatload of money to restore and repair this grand hotel. The process took about 4 years. The Biltmore at Coral Gables saw a series of upgrades in 1987 when it reopened as a deluxe hotel. Nonetheless, it shut down again 3 years later because of its lack of luxury. Subsequently, an additional $3 million was used to renovate the 18-hole golf course and liven up the rooms and repair the pool. Moves that were sufficient to pique the interest of a private hotel organization in 1992. This company poured an extra $40 million into invaluable improvements, propelling the hotel to its former glory. With its past linked to organized crime, the building being home to many veterans who died during the hospital years, and the homeless bodies that were stored in during the medical school years, it's no wonder why this place is as haunted as they say. While trying to save her son, a young mother fell to her death trying to reach the balcony railing in the high-rise tower suite. People who die during the process of trying to save a loved one or giving birth to their child sometimes haunt the place of their death, as they don't know if their loved ones were saved. At least that's the theory. Marital infidelity has long been a cause for murder, and being caught in a room with a lover often ends in tragedy. In the roaring 20s and 30s, gangsters sought to blend into the places where the public visits, even if it was mob-owned. However, their lifestyles, or sometimes even their temper, could be their undoing, as evident in Wilson murdering Fatty in the 13th floor speakeasy. Poor Fatty, who cherished his new venture and all of its perks, including his beloved Biltmore Hotel, was taken too soon, and he was just not ready to move on yet. During the 10 years that the Biltmore was vacant, from 1973 to 1983, People who stood on the golf course behind the hotel used to be able to see windows open and close by themselves, and mysterious lights could be seen in the windows. They also heard the sound of music coming from the hotel. There are countless stories about the spirits that call the Biltmore their home. Guests have been teased by entities who open and close doors and play with the lights. Guests have also awakened to see male entities dressed in hospital gowns looking at them. These shy entities have also been seen wandering the hallways and disappear as soon as someone makes eye contact. A transparent couple has been seen dancing in one of the ballrooms. They vanish into thin air in front of living witnesses. They even have their own lady in white. This sad entity lingers in some of the tower suites, wandering the halls, and sometimes sits on guests' beds. She has also been seen rushing around the balcony, where she accidentally fell to her death while saving her son. Our friend Fatty is also a constant hangaround. Described as being a jovial spirit, full of fun and having a deep appreciation for a good Cuban cigar and women. Fatty loves to wander the 13th floor, to help out in the elevators, and to even go to the restaurants on occasion. He still enjoys the company of the living, especially women. He was so pleased that the Biltmore was restored to its former glory that he is content to hang out there, spending his afterlife in the hotel, getting some chuckles by playfully teasing the guests and staff, and is friendly and cooperative toward paranormal investigators and psychics. He is thought to be the one who plays with the lights and doors and takes the lampshades off for chuckles. Guests have heard his jovial laugh and witnessed the word boo being printed by an unseen finger on fogged up mirrors in the bathrooms. During an authorized paranormal investigation in the late 70s, he made his presence known in an EVP inadvertently recorded by the investigators. He followed them around, breathing very heavily, ending the recording with a huge sigh. His apparition has also been seen in bathroom mirrors. The elevators in the hotel go from the 2nd to the 12th floor. To visit the 13th floor, a special key is used by bellhop. Because the suite there is used for special people like presidents, political leaders, rock stars, etc., Fatty does make exceptions for pretty women and takes things into his own hands. Couples going to their rooms on the floors below the 13th have been taken to the 13th floor, passing the floor that they have pushed in the elevator, especially if the woman in the elevator is pretty. Once there, the living have heard people talking and laughing, smelled cigar smoke, and felt the strong presence of someone standing real close to them. Sometimes the elevator door shuts before the woman's male counterpart can get off, leaving the female partner alone with Fatty and his friends. Waitresses who are working in the restaurants and have had their hands full of plates have experienced the door to the dining room area being opened for them, courtesy of Fatty. Despite its haunted reputation, the Biltmore Hotel remains a beloved landmark and a popular destination for travelers from around the world. Florida is home to many haunted locations, and we have just scratched the surface today. These places are not just popular tourist destinations, but they also hold a rich history and legend that has been passed down from generation to generation. While some people might be skeptical about the existence of ghosts, the stories and experiences from those who have visited these places cannot be ignored. So the next time you pay a visit, or hell, even if you're local, skip a day at the theme parks and have a day with some different kind of thrills. I'm sure you'll be welcomed. And as they say at the Haunted Mansion in the House of Mouse, there's always room for one more. I'm Christopher Feinstein, and this is Haunted American History.